Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Michael Crapon, the co-founder of the Henry L. Stimson Center and director of its South Asia and Space Security Programs. Previously, he worked in the Carter administration, on Capitol Hill, and at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's the author of 17 books, including Better Safe Than Sorry, The Ironies of Living with the Bomb. And his latest, a collection of essays co-edited with Julia Thompson, is Deterrence, Stability, and Escalation Control in South Asia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Michael Crapon.
Ian, it's good to be back.
And Michael, the Secretary of Defense, Chuck Hagel, has met with Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif. He's also met with the new head of the military, who's also General Sharif. There's no relationship. But apparently what's at stake here is that is for the U.S. and NATO to extract all of that enormous heavy war equipment, which they had to pay an arm and a leg to get in the first place through Pakistan into Afghanistan, and they have to get it out. Obviously, they don't want to leave all this equipment. I believe they're even destroying a lot of it in a country that is not exactly stable. And I take it that what Hagel was asking the Prime Minister to do was to somehow rein in Imran Khan, who runs a state or a party that's powerful in a state on the border there with Afghanistan, where he's threatening. Imran Khan, the cricket star turned political power broker, he's threatening to use mass demonstrations to close off these supply routes in retaliation to U.S. drone strikes.
Think of this analogy, which just came into my head as you were talking, Ian. But think of this fellow, Imran Khan, as Rand Paul. And Rand Paul makes statements, takes public postures that the leadership of his own party and the country do not push back against. This is kind of what is happening in Pakistan. Imran Khan's party is the third largest party. He only has a few dozen members of his party that have been elected to the National Assembly. And yet the Prime Minister is, and other political leaders in the country, are silent as Imran rails against the U.S. presence in Afghanistan and the military relationship between Pakistan and the United States.
But what game is he playing? Because, first of all, the drone strikes are secretly approved of and the U.S. secretly cooperates with the Pakistanis. After all, a lot of these drones take off from Pakistani airfields. That a lot of the targeting is done in conjunction with Pakistan. So the Pakistani military are up to their elbows in the drone program. They just prefer to have the U.S. take all the heat for it. And, you know, Imran Khan has been very, very soft on the Taliban and these radicals, murderous radicals who are destabilizing Pakistan and would turn it into another Taliban state. I mean, he got completely repudiated recently when there was that hideous massacre of Shiites and Christians in a church where he showed up and people ran him out of town. So what's his motive? Is he just a grandstander?
Well, there isn't any leading government official in the country that can defend drone strikes, even if they have the tacit support of the political and military leadership. The fellow who was killed in a drone strike that catapulted all of this into a standoff between the United States and Pakistan was somebody who had hundreds, if not thousands, of innocent Pakistanis murdered by his cohort. And as you say, Imran Khan doesn't talk about that. And people who hate the drone strikes don't talk about the people that they are directed against. Now, these strikes are so unpopular that the Pakistani officials did close the airfields where the drones were based, but they're operating from other airfields nearby across the border. And, you know, they take out leadership targets in Pakistan and in Afghanistan, but they also create great difficulties. And not all of the targets are leaders, Ian. One of the problems we're having with Afghanistan now is getting the president of the country to sign an agreement that provides protections, legal protections, of U.S. troops that may stay in country after most leave in 2014. And what triggered that particular standoff was a drone strike in Afghanistan against a guy on a motorcycle. Now, that strike also killed a young kid, along with this motorcycle rider. Now, I am not privy to the intelligence behind these drone strikes, but I think it's a reasonable conclusion that if it's a single guy riding a motorcycle, he is not a bigwig in the terrorist infrastructure. So what this tells me, bottom line, is that this whole business of drone strikes, even though they have been curtailed, there is still a real lack of cohesion on the part of the Obama administration. Cohesion that weighs military advantage against political consequences, which are invariably negative in both Afghanistan and Pakistan.
Again, I'm speaking with Michael Crapon, co-founder of the Henry L. Stimson Center and director of its South Asia and Space Security Program. Previously, he worked in the Carter administration on Capitol Hill and at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's the author of 17 books, including Better, Safe Than Sorry, The Ironies of Living with the Bomb. And his latest book is a collection of essays co-edited with Julia Thompson, Deterrent, Stability, and Escalation Control in South Asia. Well, there's no question that not only are these drone policies incredibly unpopular in Pakistan, they're also unpopular here in the United States with a lot of people, too. And they do elicit a lot of outrage. But in the case of Imran Khan, clearly he is not necessarily the best messenger, and he's not exactly using this outrage in a way that seems to be anything more to do with justice as much to do with some kind of peculiar self-promotion. And for a while there were rumors that he was even supported surreptitiously by the ISI. And as you know, Michael, the whole Pakistan is beset and absolutely mired in conspiracy theories. So I don't know what to make of what's going on, but it would seem to me the best thing that could happen here is for the U.S. to get out, which is what's happening, right? But this getting the equipment out is really the problem, and it seems that you can't leave all that stuff behind. That's just going to end up, creating the next war, which apparently is going to come no matter what, right?
Well, there's a great irony here in that Imran Khan wants the United States very much to leave. He wants us to leave the region. He wants us out of Afghanistan, as well as disconnected from the Pakistani landscape. But it's hard to do that while blocking the removal of armored personnel carriers and tanks and all the like. We have another way to get him out. It's more expensive, and it goes through Russia, actually, and some of the Central Asian states, but it's much preferable to get the stuff out the way it came, most of it came in, which is from Karachi port and then up landlines all the way through the passes to Afghanistan.
Well, I guess when we're sort of talking about this is what Hagel was negotiating with the new prime minister over, who was appointed his namesake as the new general. And Hagel also met with this guy, and they're basically, Hagel didn't say, you know, if you can't rein in Imran Khan, we're going to stop, you know, subsidizing the Pakistani military. He said, well, if you can't rein him in, the Congress is not going to want to pony up the money. But I think the broader issue always here is this very vexed relationship between these two countries and the extent to which Pakistan is this unique country, in as much as it uses its nuclear umbrella as a way, you know, it conducts state terrorism under a nuclear umbrella, and this is the fastest growing nuclear arsenal in the world. It's that in itself, I think, is the scariest part of it, isn't it?
Well, there are published reports in the region that suggest that between a fifth and a quarter of the funding for Pakistan's military comes through U.S. assistance. So that's a significant sum. And when the defense secretary says that these so-called coalition support funds are at risk because of this blockade, it's a significant incentive for the military leadership and the political leadership to find their voices and to clarify national interest against this dynamic but mercurial political figure. As for the nuclear business in the region, we kind of lose sight of this because, number one, Afghanistan takes priority, and getting out of Afghanistan takes priority. And then we have these not-so-small problems with Iran and North Korea. But in actuality, the nuclear competition on the subcontinent between India and Pakistan is the most dangerous competition by far in the world. We've added up the numbers, and in the 15 years since India and Pakistan tested nuclear devices in 1998, together these countries have flight tested no less than 17, I'm not making this number up, 17 nuclear-capable delivery vehicles. Now, that's more. Both of these countries are now working with more nuclear weapon delivery vehicles types, not numbers, types, than the United States. Now, in this 15-year period, when they've moved forward with all of these weapon systems, they have agreed to actually three useful arrangements to try and damper this competition. Three. So they've agreed, for example, to give each other notification before they flight test a ballistic missile. And they've agreed to notify each other if they have nuclear accidents. These are useful agreements, but when you add them up and compare them to the competition in nuclear weapons systems, it's no contest. Diplomacy is lagging so far behind advancing nuclear capabilities and military doctrines, I might add. They're changing. It's not a good picture. And it's, believe it or, you know, we're having this conversation. There aren't that many conversations about nuclear dangers in South Asia right now.
But in spite of the fact that this is the most likely flashpoint on the planet, and if there's going to be a use of a nuclear weapon since Nagasaki, which mercifully there has not been, it's likely to be here, and it's likely to be on a pretty large scale. Or, even worse, it's likely to involve some use of terrorism. In other words, or some transfer to terrorists, because this is the scary part about Pakistan's military policy, is that they use terrorism as a state instrument to level the playing field with the Indian military. It has vast more numbers, but if you use state terrorism under a nuclear umbrella in Kashmir and places like that, it's not a huge leap to suggest at some point in the future you might use state nuclear terrorism.
There is evidence, Ian, of changing attitudes about these proxies in the senior echelons of the Pakistan military. So young Pakistani soldiers, like our young soldiers, they have gone through two and three tours fighting against militants up along the Afghan border. So they appreciate more and more the problems of state sponsorship. Now, there are some groups that the Pakistani military are fighting today. There are other groups that they are not fighting. There's a group of militants that they're banking on to have a role in Afghanistan after most of our troops leave in 2014.
That's the Haqqani Network, right?
The Haqqani Network. They're right. not fighting them.
Right. Well, I'm pretty much we're out of time here, Michael, and let's have a follow-up conversation because, regrettably, this situation is not going away soon. And I thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Take care.
You too. Again, I've been speaking with Michael Crapon, the co-founder of the Henry L. Stimson Center and director of its South Asia and space security programs. Previously, he worked in the Carter administration on Capitol Hill and at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He's the author of 17 books, including Better Safe Than Sorry, The Ironies of Living with the Bomb. And his latest is a collection of essays co-edited with Julia Thompson, Deterrent Stability and Escalation Control in South Asia. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You can also contact me, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. Love.